Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Tell a real quick story, because Kane, who is watching our live stream right now, Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, TheFanUpstate on YouTube and Twitter, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitch. Join us, go behind the scenes, chat with other members of the Armada, hang out with Zoe and I during the breaks, et cetera, et cetera. Kane, as we were talking about Dabo's rant on accountability for officials, which I am wholeheartedly in agreement with, Kane said one of the reasons that there's not a better standard is, quote, it puts the responsibility on the ACC, et cetera, to properly train these refs, and they don't want to do it. Yeah, and I don't know if it's about the actual training. I don't know if it's about the accountability. I don't know what angle it is, but I get the point you're driving at, and I totally agree with you. Tell you a quick story. Before I moved to the butthole of America, Jacksonville, when I lived in Pensacola, Florida, I was the in-arena host for the Pensacola Ice Flyers. And 15, 16, something like that, they had a game fall on Halloween night. And so, because Rob Brown loves some Halloween, I went in costume. Well, the costume I went in was as a blind hockey official. Now, I didn't do it as like a form of protest against officiating across the SPHL. I did it because it was funny. No other reason. And part of hockey culture is everybody hates the refs, right? It's just like, it's an ongoing gag. I've had conversations with refs in the ECHL here in the Ville and in the SPHL when I lived in Pensacola. I've had conversations with the refs like, doesn't it bother you that it doesn't matter what building you go into, you are always the most hated three or four guys on the ice? And almost exclusively, every one of them is like, no, dude, like, that's just part of the culture. That's just kind of what hockey is. Like, that happens at the lowest level of juniors all the way up to the NHL. If you're an official, you know you are going to be the most chirped at dude on the ice any given night. So, that being said, low-level minor league hockey refereeing is not always exceptional, because those guys barely get paid to do the job. So most people, like, the guys that referee low-level minor or major or low-level professional league hockey, they do it because they love hockey. Like, they do it because they love hockey. And many of them, like, they were hockey players and just hockey's all they've ever known. So when they get done playing, when they can't play anymore, reffing's up next. Because in order to ref, you've got to be able to skate like a hockey player and know the game of hockey. And I'm telling you, hockey is not just a fast-paced game, but it's a very complicated game to officiate. And it's a very difficult game to officiate. So most of the guys that ref are former players. And they don't get paid a lot. They do it because they love the game of hockey, and it's just what they know. So, the low-level officiating was not very good for the SPHL that year. And I did a Halloween game where I dressed fully as a blind ref. I went in full ref garb. The team got me a ref shirt with the orange sleeves and everything. And I put on a hockey helmet, and I had my glasses, and I put over them those big, really big, like, glasses covers, you know, when you go get your eyes dilated at the eye doctor. And when you leave, they give you those big, like, shades. You put them on over your actual glasses. I put on a pair of those. I went out with a cane, of seeing eye cane and all of that. And went out and did my stuff on the camera and was in uniform the whole time and acted in character, right? Like, when I went out there for the on-ice interactions and whatnot, you know, I walked my way out there with the seeing eye cane and everything. And so it was really just having fun on Halloween. Well, our team got an email from the league and a fine from the league for what they called, and I quote, denigrating the integrity of the officiating of the league. And the president of the team at the time called me into his office, and he's like, yo, look at this email. And I read it, and I was like, dog, I'm so sorry. And he's like, don't be. Don't be. The ref sucks. You were just having fun, whatever. And he wrote back an email to the SPHL that said, I don't think our in-arena host was denigrating the integrity of the officials. I think the officials denigrate the integrity of the officials the way that they are officiating. And a large part of that was because, and he told me, there's very minimal training for refs at that level. Like, basically, if you find a guy who played hockey and knows the game at an elementary level, those guys get hired. They get hired to do the job. Doesn't pay a lot, but they get hired to do the job. And that is, like, that's kind of how I feel a lot about college officiating to some degree. Like, most of these guys who do it, I've told you before, a guy by the name of Jason Autry. I used to work with Jason Autry. When I was the public information officer for Okaloosa County, Jason Autry was the director of public works. Ran the sewers and the roads, man. Jason was a great dude. Loved Jason. Like, I loved Jason. I hung out with Jason all the time. Jason Autry is a head official in the Southeastern Conference. Jason Autry was the head official of the LSU-South Carolina game last year. The game that most of us, not all of us, but most of us feel, officiating screwed South Carolina out of a win. He was the head official of that game. And I reached out to him after the game. He never responded to me, which totally makes sense. Like, even though we were boys, like, he's like, all right, this guy works in media. I'm not talking to him, which is understandable. But the point is, that was Jason's weekend job. That man was officiating one of the games at the time, even though it was earlier in the season. It felt like one of the most important games of the year. Brian Kelly was, you know, even last year was kind of on the hot seat. And Shane Beamer's Gamecocks at that point kind of felt like maybe they got a little something working here. One of the biggest games of the year was being officiated by a guy who from Monday to Friday, from 8 till 5 p.m., is the director of public works for Podunk, Okaloosa County, Florida. Right? Like, that's the point that I'm making. Why not have guys that do it for a living? Yeah, I know they would only officiate most of them 12, some of them 13, 14, the best of the best 15 games per year. I get it. And I know money is always the issue. But much like I feel about NIL and rev share and all that, please don't tell me when college football is a multi-billion dollar industry that there's not money to give refs $100,000 to that. This is what you do. All you do is officiate. We are going to have you officiate all under the NCAA banner. There's no more ACC refs, Big Ten refs, SEC refereeing crews. You referee for the NCAA. And that's what you do. We're going to have a group out of Florida so they can all train together, a group out of Michigan, they can all train together, a group out of California, they can all train together. And every week, we are going to take the highest graded officials, and you're going to get the biggest games of the week. And if you go out there and you screw it up and you have a bad game, cool. Next week, you're downgraded. Next week, instead of doing Ohio State, Michigan, next week, you're going to be doing Cal Stanford. And if you're on Cal Stanford, we're going to drop you down to doing, you know, South Dakota State, Montana. And if you screw up that one, we're going to drop you down to doing the University of West Florida versus Delta State. And when you get good at doing that game, you can come back up a level. Why not? Why not do it that way? Why not have an intense training, centralized protocol that refs come on board, but they get paid a hell of a lot of money to put 8 months worth of training in to get ready to not blow it on Saturdays in the fall when tens of millions of us are watching every single game? Why would we not do that? All right, we'll circle back around to that later on in the show. But, ladies and gentlemen, it is 7:08 in the morning. You now have less than 52 minutes until you have got to get to the office, until you get ready to take that first and all-important break of the day, until you talk sports with your coworkers or your supervisor, your boss, your IT guy, whoever you might talk sports with. And when you do that, you got to know what's going on, don't you? Of course you do. That's why you're here, and that's why we do this. It is an accelerated and abbreviated version of the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet. Top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office. Let's dive right in with item numero uno. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee has put out the first college football playoff rankings and therefore have put out the first college football playoff bracket. The rankings stack up this way. The Buckeyes of Ohio State, as they are in the AP poll, are the number one overall team in the country, as they are in the AP poll as well. Indiana, Texas A&M, and Alabama are numbers 2, 3, and 4. The AP poll remains the same through number 5, Georgia, in both spots. We have our first differentiation at number 6 and 7. In the college football playoff rankings, Ole Miss is number 6, or excuse me, Ole Miss is number 6, BYU is number 7, Texas Tech is 8, Oregon is number 9. In the AP poll, they're almost exactly the opposite. In the AP poll, it is Oregon 6, Ole Miss 7, BYU, Texas Tech 9. In the college football rankings, it is 6, Ole Miss 7, BYU 8, Texas Tech 9, Oregon. Number 10 is Notre Dame in both polls. Another difference here, number 11, Texas in the college football playoff rankings, Oklahoma in the AP. Oklahoma is number 12 in the college football playoff rankings. However, they're not in right now. And I'll tell you why here in just a moment. For the rest of the top 25, number 13, Utah, followed by ACC representatives Virginia and Louisville at 14 and 15. Another SEC team in Vanderbilt at 16. And then back to the ACC for 17 and 18. That's Georgia Tech and Miami. USC is number 19, ahead of Iowa at number 20. Your top 25 rounds out with Michigan, Missouri, Washington, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee. Now, remember, the bracket is not going to look like the rankings because it is the top 5 highest ranked conference champions followed by the next 7 highest ranked teams, which means that the bracket would shake out this way. The 12-5 matchup in the first round would be Memphis and Georgia. The winner of that would take on number 4 Alabama. The 8-9 matchup is number 8 Texas Tech taking on number 9 Oregon. The winner of that would get number 1 overall seeded Ohio State. The 6-11 matchup is number 6 Ole Miss taking on Virginia, the highest ranked ACC team at the moment. The winner of that would get number 3 Texas A&M. And the 7-10 matchup, a religious bowl, as the Notre Dame Fighting Irish would take on the BYU Cougars. The winner of that matchup would get number 2 Indiana. Coming up on the show, we are going to take a look at the pass to the playoffs for the top 20-ish team, see who's got a little wiggle room, and who is up against it. We will get to that coming up later in the show, but let's get to item number 2. The NFL trade deadline passed yesterday at 4 p.m. We did have a flurry of moves. There were a few moves that moved the needle. Most of them did not, but here's where we're at. The Jets did make a couple of moves. The Jets got Jasur Taylor out of for a 2028 conditional 7th-round pick from the Chargers. The Chargers got offensive tackle Trevor Penning for a 2027 6th-round pick out of New Orleans. Quinnen Williams is a defensive tackle picked up by the Dallas Cowboys from the New York Jets in return for a 2026 2nd-rounder. A 2027 1st-rounder, and defensive tackle Mazi Smith, who is on his way up to New York at this point. So effectively, what has happened is that the absolute genius and icon that he is, Jerry Jones, turned Micah Parsons into Quinnen Williams, Logan Wilson, a 2nd-round pick, and a little bit of cap room. That's what the Cowboys got for Micah Parsons. That's not good. In fact, I would say that is objectively bad.
That is at least good.
No.
It may not be great.
In what world?
But it's at least good. The player that they traded Micah Parsons for has already paid dividends. And if they are scouting as good as they probably
are. Paid dividends for Green Bay?
These other ones will also pay off. I don't get the hatred towards the Cowboys. I just don't understand. I don't.
How many sacks does Quinnen Williams have right now?
I don't care. They're not
team. You don't care.
They're not my
team. Time out. What you don't get to do is say, I don't care. They're not my team. Well, but you should feel this way.
I just did.
I know that. Yeah, you can't. You can, but you shouldn't.
Absolutely
you
can.
You can, but you shouldn't. It doesn't make sense to me to be like, I don't care. That's bad, whatever. But you, I don't understand why you feel this
I'm
way.
Just trying to understand why you care so much. That's all.
Because I am against inept ownership. That's why. At its core, I am against inept ownership. Even when it impacts teams I don't like, I am against inept ownership. Always have been, over, always will be.
Secret society.
Well, I'm not in that one, so.
The media secret society.
Yes.
You absolutely are.
It's the media.
I've seen the ring. You tried to hide it. I saw it.
Damn, I thought I put that
I shouldn't
away.
Have said anything. Now I'm going to, disappear.
Micah Parsons has been turned into Quinnen Williams, who has 1 sack on this year and is not a particularly efficient pass rusher. Logan Wilson, whose cap is 2.5 sacks any given year in his career, a 2nd-rounder, and some cap room. Nice job, Jira.
Nice job.
How many sacks does Micah Parsons have since he went to...
I don't know. Without looking it up off the top of my head, I guarantee it's more than one. In fact, I would go so far as to say I would be shocked if there are more than two games where Micah Parsons had less than one sack in those games. I'd be willing to bet. I don't know off the top of my head, but I know more than one. More than one. How many did he average when he was in Dallas? Oh, a hell of a lot more than one. All right, a couple of other moves that that did get made yesterday. Seattle picked up wide receiver Rashid Shaheed from the New Orleans Saints in return for a 2026 fourth and fifth rounder. I actually like that move a lot. Kind of an over-the-top wide receiver nine guy, take the top off the defense. That's going to help Sam Darnold out quite a bit. As far as the Saints go, committed to the rebuild at this point. We are now officially committed to the rebuild, and I think that's the right move. Sauce Gardner, this was one of the bigger shocks. Sauce Gardner will leave the Jets. He is headed to the Colts in return for a first rounder next year, a first rounder in 2027, and wide receiver Adney Mitchell, who are all on their way to the New York Jets. I really like this because Sauce Gardner had hit his cap in New York. And I don't think that Sauce, who is kind of a boisterous, to some degree volatile personality on the field, he was never going to mesh with what Aaron Glenn wants to build with New York. So the Jets now have two first rounders, and Adney Mitchell is a good addition to a wide receiver core that has not done a lot and is obviously missing some dudes. I like that pickup. I like that trade both ways. Jacoby Myers leaving Las Vegas. He is on his way to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Called that shot yesterday, by the way. The Jags got to go get a wide receiver. Here's why I like this for the Jags. You're out Brian Thomas. You are out Travis Hunter. Both on the IR. Both will be back in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Jacoby Myers is good enough to cover that gap until they're gone and is a wonderful number three wide receiver when those two guys come back. Jacksonville, when they are fully healthy, is going to have one of the best wide receiver cores in football. And I will say this. I think this is at the point where, by the way, Joey just texted and said Micah Parsons has 6.5 sacks on the year. So, grain of salt.
Yeah, but that also counts the Dallas sacks.
He didn't play for Dallas this year. He has 6.5 sacks for the Packers, as he is a Packers. Like, no, it's not.
I didn't think he got traded until later on in the year.
No.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
You're absolutely positive.
Now I'm not because you're making me question myself.
It doesn't
matter. At the end of the day,
it does.
What Jerry traded away is not anywhere close to what Micah Parsons adds to a defense.
For Green Bay, I found three sacks and a couple half sacks. Half sacks don't count.
I genuinely cannot understand a world where people think Micah Parsons for Quinnen Williams and Logan Wilson in a second rounder is a good trade. It's just not a good trade.
It's not a great trade, but it's a good trade. You got guys that will compete.
Not like Micah Parsons.
Okay. He's helped Green Bay win every game.
If you traded Patrick Mahomes and you got Joe Flacco, you wouldn't go, well, he's won some games that he's helped. You'd go, what the hell are we doing? You would riot.
Under,
I would riot with you.
Under Andy Reid, Flacco would probably win. He's winning in Cleveland.
Cincinnati. I can't. People, I can't help with this. If you think Quinnen Williams and Logan Wilson.
Every single day, I can't help with this.
If you think Quinnen Williams and Logan Wilson are equal Micah Parsons, I can't help you. I just can't help you.
Open your mind a little bit.
I don't need to. I open my eyes and I see it.
You're a myopic hate of Dallas for some reason.
Yes.
I don't care.
Dallas fans, shut up and enjoy it. Jerry's a genius and you're better now than you were when you had Micah effing Parsons on your team. You're better now.
It's not as bad as he makes it out.
Yeah, no, but it's great, Dallas fans.
It's fine.
Let's get Cole Bryson on the line. I bet he's just happy. It's like Quinnen Williams and Logan Wilson for Micah Parsons. What an amazing trade. What an amazing trade. I think that's spectacular.
Have we done number three yet?
No, we haven't. Okay. By the way, Texter said, you're forgetting a first-round pick Dallas got as well, which makes it a much better trade. No, Texter, I'm not. They sent the first-rounder to the Jets for Quinnen Williams. You don't have that first-rounder. That's Quinnen Williams now. Do you understand what I'm saying?
They still have their own first-rounder.
You just traded a first-round pick for a guy that has one sack on the year.
Do they still have their own first-rounder?
Yes, okay. But they didn't get that for Micah
Parsons.
It's not
like they eliminated their first-round pick.
They eliminated a first-round pick for Quinnen Williams. I can't help you if you can't see that's a dumbass move. It's a dumbass, objectively bad move.
It's amazing how you can make my camera jump.
I got force, I got power. Item number three, the college basketball season is officially open. It kicked off with a handful of games on Monday, including the Clemson Tigers, who opened up their season with an 88-38 win over the New Hampshire Wildcats, who came down to Clemson to take one on the chin. 18 points off the bench from Ace Buckner for Clemson. Jake Wallen had 11 as a starter for the Clemson Tigers. The Tigers shot 51% from the floor, 32% from behind the arc, 30-41 from the free throw stripe. South Carolina got their season started off last night with a 91-72 win over the North Carolina A&T Aggies. It was the three-point shooting for the Gamecocks, that was impressive. 14 of 32 for a 44% completion percentage from three. 9 different Gamecocks had at least one three-pointer. The Cocks also shot 49.2% from the floor on 31 of 63 shooting defensively. They held North Carolina A&T. I don't love the number to 43.3% from the floor, but it is a good NCAA basketball team. At that level of basketball. So it's not the worst thing in the world. Again, is it going to be a struggle bus year for South Carolina? Probably. And we'll talk more about it as we get close to it. In other massive basketball scores from last night, number one, Purdue, 82-51 winners over Evansville. Number six, Duke edged Texas, 75-60. Kentucky, 77-51 winners over Nichols. And Texas Tech, 98-60 winners over Lindenwood, which is a real thing. Dating back to Monday, Houston, 75-57 winners over Lehigh. Number three, Florida, upended by number 13, Arizona. The defending champs go down in game number one, 93-87. UConn, 79-55 over New Haven. St. John's drops 108 on Quinnipiac to their 74. Michigan with the high score of the weekend, 121-78 winners over Oakland. BYU, 71-66 over Villanova. Oh, Chris Lewis, had the mighty have fallen. Louisville, 104-45 over SC State. UCLA, 80-74 over Eastern Washington. Arkansas, 109-77 over Southern. Bama, 91-62 over North Dakota. Iowa State, 88-50 over Farley Dickinson. Illinois, number 17 in the country, 113-55 on Jackson State. Tennessee takes down Mercer, 76-71. Kansas, 94-51 winners over Green Bay. Auburn, 95-90, desperation overtime win over Bethune-Cookman for the Tigers. Things maybe not great in Opelika, Alabama. We'll see how it goes. Michigan State, 80-69 over Colgate. Wisconsin, 96-64 over Campbell. North Carolina, 94-54 over Central Arkansas. And that is where we end up. All right, let's take a break. We'll come back here in just a minute from right now. We've got to get back into the NFL trade deadline. We'll talk more college football playoff rankings and what I'd like to get into. Let's take a look at the teams that are contenders and see who's got the most difficult and the easiest path to make sure that they're locked into a playoff spot. We'll do that next on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let me address the texter that sent in the text that said, you're forgetting a first-round pick Dallas got as well, which makes it a much better trade. The Dallas Cowboys trade with the Green Bay Packers for Micah Parsons was Parsons in a second-rounder for Williams, or for what turned into Williams, Logan Wilson, and a first rounder. You are correct. There is a first rounder thrown in there. He said they got two first round picks, you dumbass, and got an extra next year in 2026. They traded the 2027. Get your job correct. You're right. I left out the first round pick. You are correct. And that is a huge piece, and I shouldn't have, and you're right, Texter. I'm a dumbass. That's my bad. I left out the first round pick in my conversation. You better nail the first round pick. You better nail the first round pick because there is a huge difference in proven commodity like Micah Parsons and a first-round pick. It's just it's a proven commodity. When players are moved on for a first-round pick, like happened a couple of times yesterday, Sauce Gardner on his way out. That is because
I have a question because I don't remember. Did Jerry Jones draft Micah Parsons?
He's the general manager, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay, so he recognized that.
Yes.
So there's a chance that maybe next year...
Absolutely, there's a chance he gets it right.
Okay, that's all I want to know.
And I will 1,000% say to the texter who said that I am a dumbass, I will 1,000% say that there is a chance that we circle back around next year and Jerry Jones nails his picks... And he gets it right, and they get the next Micah Parsons, and I come in here, and I say, hey, turns out Jerry killed the game. But is he going to get a Micah Parsons? Like, there's not many of them. Got another text that said, Quinnen Williams is a defensive tackle, not a pass rusher, and he's made 3 straight Pro Bowls. Again, the point was you moved on from a generational edge rusher. And you don't have to agree with me on this. But NFL general managers have said it, that the second most important position on a football team now is edge rusher. It is quarterback, edge rusher. Go look at the draft class from last year. A lot of edge rushers. And now all of a sudden, edge rushers are being routinely taken with top 5 and top 10 picks. It's the most important spot. So listen, Quinnen Williams is, let's be clear about what Quinnen Williams is. He's a good interior defensive tackle against the run. 32 sacks, 17 solo, 15 assisted so far this year. And he is on pace to match what he did last year. But it has been a couple of years since he went to his 3 straight Pro Bowls, if I recall correctly. It is a guy who, in 2022, had a dozen sacks. In 2023, had 5.5 sacks. In 2024, last year, had 6 sacks. 2021, 6. 2027. He has won this year. Is one. So, again, it might very well turn out. If Quinnen Williams shows up and let's say that Brian Schottenheimer just gets it, plugs him in, and he's a beast, sure, Jerry maybe got this right. But I got to tell you, you're going to have to nail Williams, you're going to have to nail Wilson, and you're going to have to nail the first round pick for me to say that you were in any way, shape, or form ahead of what you gave up in Micah Parsons. Like and it may very well come down to, do you find the next Micah Parsons in the first round pick? But there's not a lot of Micah Parsonses out there. That's why this is such a big time story. All right, let me get Kevin in here before we run to the break. Kev, welcome back to the show, big fella. Good to have you.
What's happening?
Not much, buddy.
Hey, man. Dallas should just, I don't know, shut their system down, bro. Like, I'm tired even looking at them. Like, it's been 30-something years since they did something, and he still keep doing stupid stuff, so... Just go ahead and send them to the Arena League or do something else with them because I'm tired of even talking about them. They suck. Like, Jerry Jones, until Jerry Jones leaves, Dallas will be nothing. Like, he's cursed that whole program for as long as he stays in that building. Like, I'm done with him. But you were talking about the referees a while ago. They should hire professional referees at every level. Maybe not little league, but high school plus, they need real referees because – you're costing games now. You done about got Dabo fired over a call. Like, it probably should never got that high, but at the same time, you cost a game over a call that you own a bonehead call.
Yeah, we talked about that, the Clemson call a little bit yesterday, Kev, and the take that I had was because it immediately got hit with a bunch of texters going, wait a minute, Rob, the Clemson player was all over the Duke wide receiver as he was making his way up the field. Now, I thought... I would have labeled it as hand fighting, right? Like if a wide receiver puts his hands on the DB, the DB has his hands on the wide receiver, that's hand fighting. That's going to be allowed to go. But the take I had was, if you are mad that the DPI was called on an offensive pass interference, like blatantly textbook in offensive pass interference, and you are mad that I had the audacity to say that that call cost Clemson in the game because there was PI leading up to that moment, then you should be equally as mad that that defensive pass interference wasn't called 12 yards before it was called by the back judge. Why was a flag not thrown by the side judge or by the up the field official who would have been around the spot where it happened? Why did a flag not come out on that spot to indicate a DPI in order to just give Duke what they would have deserved in that spot? The fact that it didn't come out until it was an OPI to make it right, like, and this is why, this is where I start going into a point that a lot of people kind of check out, Kev, but like, The game is deeper than that. If you go, well, if he throws it anywhere else on the field, cool. But if that defender removes Duke's wide receiver from the middle of the field, that changes what everybody else on the field is going to do. It changes what guys running over the top routes are going to do. It changes how the defense is structured on the football field. It changes what the predicted outcome of that play is for the Duke Blue Devils. So you should be equally as mad that the DPI wasn't called at the line, or I shouldn't say at the line, because you get your, you know, your yard, whatever it is. It wasn't called 3 yards past the line of scrimmage on something that will absolutely impact a 5-wide passing route at that spot. So no matter if you want to say, oh, Rob, you're mad about the wrong part, like, fine, but you should still be upset about what happened before that, because it impacted everything else that happened everywhere else on the football field. All I'm asking for, all Dabo asked for, and I agree with him entirely, which has not happened much this year, Kev, but what Dabo called for that I totally agree with is some level of accountability for officials, or a system in place where we just have guys that this is what they do. And just like you at your job and me at my job, Kev, when you do well, you are rewarded and there are benefits. And when you do poorly, there are punishments and you are stepped backwards. Just give me something that I don't have to watch games and constantly feel like I am complaining about poor officiating.
And it take a lot after game. When you're doing that, you're going back and forth with this referee who will not even look at you because he knew he called a bad call. Now, you got the referee that's going to make another bad call on the other end to make up for a call that he didn't make. Like, just, like, call it, man. Or don't call nothing. Just let it play.
Yeah, no, that's it. Kev, appreciate the phone call, brother. Good to have you back on the show, buddy. Anytime, you're welcome to. So are the rest of you, Armada, at 844-326-3663. And listen, I know I kind of butted head. I don't have anything with the texter here who was defending the Quinnen Williams trade. I don't have an issue with it. I just don't see a world where Quinnen Williams, Logan Wilson, and a first is equal to Michael Parsons. If you disagree with me, that's fine. I'd love to have you on the show to talk about it at 844-326-3663. But I think Quinnen Williams is a good player. I think he's a very good player. Logan Wilson, I think he's probably an okay player. Maybe there's the potential for greatness. He's not an old guy. There's the potential he's good, but he's not Micah Parsons, especially as a middle linebacker. Dallas, I will say this. Dallas is better against the run today than they were yesterday or the day before. They're better against the run. But again, in an era where defensive success is predicated by edge rushers, just like offensive success is predicated by quarterbacks. And that is a general manager's perspective. Letting arguably the best pass rusher in football, no worse than number two, go, like, you better nail an edge rush pick with the number one draft pick that you have as a bonus next year. Like, you better do that. If you want to talk about that, if you think I'm wrong, have at it. 844-326-3663 is the number. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Let's take a look at some of the teams that are in the playoff bracket, what might knock them out. Some of the teams that are out of the playoff bracket, what might boost them in. We'll do that next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Spike texted the show about the Cowboys, said, so you're telling me there's a chance? To which I replied, yeah, about the same as Sydney Sweeney saying yes to a date with me. But you're allowed to ask.
Why are you looking, man? You're a married man.
Yeah, no, I'm a gentleman. I'd invite my wife to come along, too.
Oh, okay.
She might even say, yeah, who knows?
You know, wow.
Who knows? Ladies and gentlemen, the college football playoff rankings are out. We have talked about them already. We'll talk about them a little bit more here. The Buckeyes of Ohio State, number one, Indiana, two, Texas A&M, and Alabama, three and four. Two Big Ten teams, two SEC teams inside of the top four. Those four teams would get a bye. The next two spots, Georgia, Ole Miss, both occupied by an SEC team. And then the Big 12 has two teams at BYU and Texas Tech. The next Big Ten team is Oregon at number nine. Independent Notre Dame rounds out your top 10. 11 and 12, SEC, Texas, and Oklahoma. The Big 12 holds number 13 with Utah. The first two ACC participants in the rankings are Virginia and Louisville at 14 and 15. Back to the SEC for Vanderbilt, and then Georgia Tech and Miami of the ACC at 17 and 18. The Big Ten has the next three in USC, Iowa, and Michigan. Back to the SEC with Mizzou at number 22. Big Ten, ACC, SEC, 23, 24, 25, Washington, Pittsburgh, and Tennessee. If the bracket was to be laid out today, you would have, of course, Ohio State at number one. They would get the winner of the 8-9 game, Oregon and Texas Tech. Indiana, number two, would get the winner of the 10-7 game, Notre Dame and BYU. Number three, Texas A&M, would get the winner of the Virginia Ole Miss game. And number four, Alabama, would get the winner of the Memphis and Georgia game. Let me start with this. Should we consider, should the College Football Playoff Selection Committee consider reseeding after the first round? And here's why I ask. There is a world. I do not think that the Memphis Tigers are beating the Georgia Bulldogs. But any given Saturday, right? Isn't that why we love college football? Any given Saturday. If Memphis was to pull the upset on Georgia, that means number one Ohio State gets either Oregon or Texas Tech, and Bama would get Georgia. And here's the reality to me. I think Georgia is a very good football team. I think Georgia is probably better overall than Texas Tech. I think Georgia and Oregon are equally good. Different, entirely different styles of football, but I think they're kind of, for me, like same level of quality. I could see them right next to each other or 5-9 and be totally fine with it. Again, the AP poll, as we mentioned just a minute ago, has Oregon at number six. The playoff ranking has them at number nine. And I will tell you a large part of that, just so we are very clear. Oregon, and I was going through the teams last night, like let's look at who's got the easiest and the toughest pass. Oregon does not have, unless you consider that Penn State was number three at the time, Oregon doesn't have a quality win on the schedule. Now, this is one of those times, and Ryan Horvath and I have had this discussion.
Neither does Indiana, do they?
Indiana has the win at Oregon. So, yes.
Okay, all right.
Now, granted, not much outside
but
of that.
Oregon hasn't beat anybody, but Indiana beat Oregon, what's that?
That's exactly fair. That's totally fair. So, this is one of those spots where, and this is why, you know, I have the discussion.
But I know you could say the same thing about Ohio State, but but they beat Texas.
I would make the argument
they
that.
They went out of the rankings and then came back in.
I would make the argument that, and I hope that I've made it clear to you guys over my coming up on 6 years here, I'm not SEC guy. Never have been. But I just think eye test, subjectively, like teams in the SEC right now, and honestly, probably teams in the Big 12 have more argument resume-based than teams in the Big 10 do. And you can thank Penn State for that, and you can thank Illinois for that. The two teams that were expected to be the next in line, you know, and neither of them has been that.
Watching a variety of games from all the conferences, I don't see that there's any other conference that's better than the Big Ten.
The SEC is better than the Big Ten.
They're not, though.
They are, though.
If you go by just the AP poll, the Big Ten has held the top two spots almost every single week.
Correct.
And it's that way now with the CFP.
And then, if you look at the AP poll, three is the SEC, four is the SEC, five is the SEC, six is the Big Ten, seven is the SEC, then the Big 12, Big 12 independent, then SEC, ACC, SEC, ACC, SEC, ACC, Big 12, ACC, SEC, Big 10.
But you sound like the guy who's last year said, well, the SEC is a better conference, even though they didn't win. How many national championships have the Big Ten? And I'm not Big Ten guy. I'm Ohio State guy. Any other team in the Big Ten wins, I don't care. But in the end, I mean, how many national championships have come out of the Big Ten in the last 5 or 6 years?
But again, that is...
So that goes against your argument.
No, it doesn't. Let me explain why. Because if you look at it, we are talking about the most quality and best conference, not just who wins the national championship. I could absolutely say, if I put LeBron James on a team full of elementary schoolers, and then we built the best team out of this radio station of ballers we could play, overall, our team would be better top to bottom on the roster. That team has LeBron James. They have the best player. But our team would be a better team overall. So, with that being said, yes, the best team for a couple of years in a row has come out of the Big Ten.
LeBron's not getting past a wall of me, you, and Fat Boy. He's going to feel it.
No, you understand LeBron would go over us because ain't none of us touching backboard, right? I think, we're not touching backboard. I will give you $1,000 if you can touch a backboard. $1,000 if you can touch a backboard. Jumping, not off a ladder. Don't do a Rob Brown, all right? Don't do a Rob Brown. A 10-foot regulation backboard. You think you can touch a backboard today? I can't. Not a chance.
No, you just the backboard.
The backboard. Yeah, I would give you $1,000 if you could. All right, I don't have $1,000. I work in radio. I would give you $1,000.
Did you see my eyes light up?
You can't touch a backboard. You can't. Lonzo, you can't get out of the chair without grimacing. I know that because I do it too.
By the way,
we're not touching backboards.
$1,000 will cover my pain.
I'm talking right now. You think you can touch a backboard?
Yes.
Confidence. I like it. There's
no doubt in my mind that I could do it.
Touch a backboard.
Yes. It's just the bottom of the backboard. Dude, think about it. What's the height of the bottom of the backboard?
It's like 9'10", dude. It's like 9'10".
What's my reach if I stand up?
Anywhere close to 9 feet.
Rob, I mean, what I'm talking
it's 9'10".
So it's 9'10". I'm 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
With my reach, that's at least 2 feet. So that's 8 feet.
Your hand is, I'll give you 2 feet. You're how tall, 6 feet?
I said 6'2".
So you're 6'2". I'll give you 2 feet. You're 8'2". You think you have a 1'8" vertical right now?
For sure.
Not a chance, dude. Not a chance.
For sure.
Not a chance. All right. Now, look, even William is like the nicest guy in the stream. LOL, no way.
Dude,
no.
All right. I will tell you this. Well, I can't do it because
any high school coaches want to open up a gym around noon today?
Well, I'll be in a gym tonight. The thing is, but it'll be the backboards will be lowered, so I can't do it that way.
It's not happening. All right, now
Rob, can you? Already said you can't.
No, I absolutely cannot.
With all the weight you lost, and you're only 40, how can you not touch
because
the backboard?
Because we are out of shape.
It's not about shape.
It's about
jumping ability. It's about power of legs.
You think that is a part of? That's a part of being in shape.
All right, I am.
My knees hurt golfing. I'm not touching a backboard.
I'm embarrassed. I would bet $1,000 that you could touch the bottom of a backboard.
I'm glad you got enough money to be throwing away a G.
Well, you started it.
Yeah, but I said I'm not touching. Okay, all right. We're not touching backboards now.
Wow.
With that being said,
no, you're not. I could.
Okay. Okay, I am ready to get to a court to watch that. All right, so let's take a look at the playoff rankings as they stand. Who's got the most room? Ohio State's got the most room. Indiana, here's the thing. I don't know how much wiggle room Indiana has because, unfortunately, left for them, they were hoping Penn State was going to be good. They're not. That win on the road at Penn State would have been a holy crap, would you look at that? That team really is good type win. Now it's not. Now it's like, you better win that game. Then they got Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin is firing Luke Fickell at the end of the year. I think that experiment, unfortunately, for Wisconsin worked. I don't know if it was a culture thing. I don't know if it was a locker room thing, a mentality thing. It didn't work.
I think there's a level. I think Fickell plateaued when he's in a level of like Cincinnati.
That might be it.
I mean, there are some coaches that can make it to that point. If you remember, he coached Ohio State for like one season. It was when Tressel had to leave, I believe. And it was not good. So I think there's a level that he plateaus at.
That's probably it. I thought, though, Wisconsin would be like, that's a spot that there's pressure at Wisconsin, but let's not pretend that it's like Ohio State pressure. Like, I thought maybe that would work. It didn't. They're what, 2-8 now? It just didn't work out.
Well, he is in that second-rate conference, the Big Ten. So, I mean, you know,
again,
that.
Bottom half of the league. I don't know what you're telling me. The bottom half of your league's terrible. That being said, there's nobody left for Indiana to beat, which is why, and I had this conversation with Horvat and Brad last night. There is a reason that Kurt Cignetti and Fernando Mendoza do not let off the gas in games. There's a reason they put 63 on Brad's Illinois Illini. There's a reason they put 56 on UCLA, 55 on Maryland. There's a reason that, as much as I have even called it out, like, why is Fernando Mendoza in this game? You are up 56-6. Why are you, like, why? Why is Fernando? The answer is because Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers have a problem. Their problem is that when they beat a top 10 Illinois team, and the one thing that they have going for them is that that win over Illinois, you could make the argument, is when the Illini started to spiral. They lost that game, they beat USC Purdue, then they lost to Ohio State, then they lost to Washington. And I, you know, you say spiral, like they're a three-loss football team. They're not going to go, because again, if there's a three-loss at-large team in the playoffs this year, it's an SEC team. And after these playoffs, I'm not sure that there are. I think it's still on the table. It's not them. So that loss, while good at the time, not as strong as you'd hope it to be. And the Oregon win is it in terms of quality. That's why Kurt Cignetti's putting 56 on as many teams as he can put 56 on. Style points may very much come into play. I don't know, at number two, that Indiana has as much runway as you think that they do. And you know me, I'm all in on Indiana. I'm all in on Kurt Cignetti. I just don't think that they have the runway that other teams do. When I look at Ohio State, they have a win over, at the time, number one Texas. Now, playoff ranked Texas. They have a win over Illinois. Illinois was 17. Again, Illinois lost a dumb game down the line, but they have that win. They still have a top 25 team in Michigan. Ohio State's schedule is not incredible, but they've got more than Indiana does, so I think they have more runway. I think a lot of this is going to come down to, in my opinion, I think a lot of this is going to come down to resumes at the end of the year. I got asked, I think either 2 weeks ago or last week on BetMGM Tonight, the conversation turned to, when you are evaluating playoff team, what matters more, resume, results, or eye test? And my answer was all three of them, and everybody is going to have their, it's kind of like when you build a character on a video game. One person might think that they want to dump all their stats into speed, just be the fastest guy on the field. I might say I really want a balanced player, a lot of speed, a lot of balance, a little bit of agility, whatever. Other guys might say I'm putting all of it into strength and toughness. I'm just going to dominate the line. It's all about how you make the build. Some of you might think that results are the most important thing. That's why Kurt Cignetti's trying to hang 56. Some of you might think, SEC fans will almost exclusively think, that resume is going to be it. Look at all these ranked teams that we had to beat. And I think a lot of people feel that way, which is why I said at the beginning of the year, if there's ever going to be a three-loss at-large team, it's going to be this year, and it's going to be out of the SEC, and it's either going to be South Carolina or Oklahoma, because the back half of their schedule is just ranked team, ranked team, ranked team, ranked team, ranked team, ranked team, all the way down. And then there's on-field performance. Here's a question I would ask. Of the on-field performance from teams 1 through, let's say, 15, which do you not think go in? Like, which team on-field performance do you look at and go, yeah, that team isn't putting the results down that made me think that's a playoff team? Maybe, like, Louisville, I think, has got to be in that discussion. I think you can make the argument that Vanderbilt has probably played their way, even at 7-2, even if they win out, probably played their way out of a playoff spot. Like, their ranked wins are LSU, we saw what happened, Mizzou against their backup quarterback. They have a loss to Texas. They have a loss to Alabama. And before that, they didn't play anybody except number 11 South Carolina. And unfortunately, the Gamecocks took a nosedive, so that one doesn't help you. I think Vandy's in that conversation. As much as I love the Doors, I think Louisville's in that discussion. We are going to keep analyzing this from 1,000 different angles as we roll on with the radio program today. We've got trade deadline talk we've got to get to, and plenty more. Don't go anywhere. We've got more in the back half of the show. But before we get there, ladies and gentlemen, if doing a sports flash was a sport, Lonzo would win every dunk competition.
I got a tape measure, by the way. We'll figure something out. The first college football playoff rankings have dropped. Ohio State is number one ahead of Indiana, Texas A&M, Alabama, and Georgia. Ole Miss is at 6, BYU is 7, followed by Texas Tech, Oregon, Notre Dame, Texas, and Oklahoma at 12. However, the fifth highest conference leader is Memphis, unranked in the CFP poll, who would slide into the 12th seed if the playoffs were today. The NFL trade deadline has passed with a flurry of moves. The Cowboys sent a 2027 first and 2027 second 6 second, and defensive tackle Mozzie Smith to the Jets for former All-Pro Quinnen Williams, and added Logan Wilson from the Bengals for a 7th-round pick. The Hornets took their 5th loss of the season, giving New Orleans their first win and a 116-112 contest. Miles Bridges led the Hornets with 22 points, while Con Knipple added 20 on 7 of 16 shooting. Trey Murphy led New Orleans with 21.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.